Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And I love that song, Stand By Me. And I love what you're talking about this morning. I've heard bits and pieces of, the bill that Governor Tom is proposing to take some of our money from racing. And he always puts it out there that he's doing something with education because that gets all the bleeding hearts in line. You know, we're going to do something with this money other than racing and gambling. I was at the Equistar Stallion Show the other day.
On Sunday.
At Hanville. And it was a stallion show, and it was a show of state representatives, and it was a show of support that the racing industry provides when they have something of controversy to stand against. There was everybody there when it came to jockeys, trainers, owners, breeders, jockey agents, you name it, people showed up. And they showed a lot of support to the state representatives, and we got a chance to talk to some of them. And some of them even give you the impression that proposing this bill and taking that money, it's not even legal at this particular time. It's a legal issue that would have to be fought
Correct.
Over. So it's not even legal without amending the old bill and whatever you got to do. You know, the impression they gave you, there's going to be big fight just over if it's legal to do this. So that was a plus. But when I saw the people that were there, I thought to myself, Governor Tom, the big bad wolf, you can huff and puff all you want, but you ain't going to blow this house down. Race, you know, we might bet our horses down on straw, but we don't build our houses out of straw. Our houses are built out of cement and steel, and our stick-to-itiveness and stick-together when we have controversial issues really stands out. This was unbelievable, the show of support that was at Equistar Stallion Show. It was more of a state representative show, a show of strength of the racing industry, than it even was a stallion show. But you know what? I couldn't believe how well-mannered those stallions were, the four that they brought out and showed. And Smarty, the last time I saw Smarty Jones was at a farm in the paddock, and he was standing on his hind legs. He came out there looking beautiful and was a total gentleman. Every stallion they showed was just and in the middle of the crowd. And I thought, boy, they are really, really well cared for, well mannered, and it was a great show for the stallions and a great show of strength for the racing industry.
No doubt. We're also, continuing to hear from industry stakeholders and then representatives from, from the legislature. And, as I mentioned just now with Andy Simoff, his senator down in Chester and Delaware counties, Tom Killian, with a statement yesterday, Tony. And I've been saying, I don't think this is going to, they're not going to be able to raid the development fund. But at the same time, it's created a bad atmosphere, and enough so we're going to talk to Brian Sanfratello tomorrow. There's a meeting today, actually, with the Equine Coalition today, and the Horse Breeders Association. But there's people that are concerned enough that they've pulled mares, that are ready to foal. And taking them elsewhere, and whether it's the Maryland, New York, Virginia, whatever. And this is, even if 30, 45, 60 days from now, it becomes obvious to everyone that nothing is going to come of this threat, there's already damage that is being done. And that'll be seen in the number of foals or some of the people that were thinking of bringing mares to Pennsylvania this year. The uncertainty, creating a atmosphere of uncertainty is a huge negative, because people want to be able to count on the future.
Right. It creates an unstable environment, like you say.
Yeah, exactly.
But, it could dramatically or somewhat affect us this year. You know, absolutely. You're right on. And it's a shame because the breeding program in Pennsylvania is such a quality program. These PA breds, not just because of the money that they get awarded, they can race any place in the country and be competitive. They're such a good breed, PA breds. I mean, we see them go all over. And they race in New York. We race in major stake races all over the country, and they produce. So it's a shame that we might get a little kick in the teeth this year, but it won't happen next year. And this thing's going to, I don't see it, getting passed in any way. It seems like it's going to be up in the air for longer than it's going to be and discussed for a long time. It's a shame, like you say, to create that uncertainty. But we'll overcome it. We will overcome it.
Tony, separate topic that I utilize you for these various, anything that falls into your sphere of expertise and experience. And the story involving Norberto Arroyo is just really sad. And I know that there's no, it's going to be, you're not going to generate a lot of sympathy for his lifestyle choices and the decisions that he's made, but it just seemed that whenever he's away from the racetrack, and I'm sure this has been true of a lot of jocks over the years, that's when the trouble starts. When they're on the grounds, working in the morning and then riding in the afternoon or evening. It's when there's idle time and, whether it's injury time and whether it's, whether it's substance abuse or, and in this case, domestic abuse, there was that highly publicized fight that his father and he and his brother got into with the pool cue story with the cabbie. And it's really depressing, frankly, to read about this, because I don't think anybody questions his talent and he's the example, the current example, but he's hardly the first time we've seen something like this.
No, it's a story I can really relate to. I haven't read the total story on him. When it comes to domestic abuse, when it comes to drug and alcohol abuse, I've been there. Not domestic abuse. I always had wives that were 5'10" or bigger than me, and they abusing them. they were always very athletic, always big and strong, and the only abuse would have been if I raised my hand, they'd have beat the hell out of me. But, no, I shouldn't even say like that. It's not funny. But the drug abuse, idle time is your biggest opponent when it comes to drug and alcohol abuse. When you're working and you have your nose to the grindstone and you're clean and sober and you're winning races, and then you get some idle time, because you're being, you're rewarding yourself. Let's say you're celebrating wins. And then all of a sudden you fall back into some bad habits and celebrate them in the wrong way. Like I said, I got clean and sober in December 15th, 1990. And it was just about six or seven years prior to that. That was just a downhill slide when it came to my business, when it came to my home life, when it came to everything I touched, my finances, drugs and alcohol consumed everything that was good in me. When I finally straightened up and I realized there's a better way to conduct yourself, and I got involved in programs and surrounded myself with strong people and a good network of people that helped me stay clean and sober. And here we go from 1990 to 2020, and I never forgot what it was to be out there bumming around. I never forgot about walking down an alley and had some money in my pocket and two guys waiting for me in my car and a guy saying, come on down there, come on, you got to come down this alley. And I just had this feeling when I get to the end of the alley and go into this doorway, I'm going to get mugged, beat up, and probably killed. And for some reason, I went to the doorway and I turned around and that was the last time I did any coke and drank any beer. And 2 days later, I went into rehab. I think of that story today as if it happened yesterday. And I think I was a dead man if I walked in that doorway on a dark alley off of Federal Street in Camden. And you got to be nuts. That's how much you want coke. And if the light went on when I got back in the car, I says, guys, and both of them are dead right now, the guys that I was with, both of them dead. I don't think I should mention their name. But they both, one was a rider, one was a trainer, they're both dead. I got clean and sober after that. They stumble bummed around till they died.
Yep.
I was going to die that night. I know it. And I think of it still today. It wasn't paranoia. I was going to die that night if I went through that doorway. And that has been a thought that has helped me to stay clean and sober. I like living. I got two wonderful kids, 38 and 36. I got a 14 and a 12-year-old. And this is all I would have missed. But you know what? Some people, they don't have that rude awakening. And, you know, Aurelia and many stories just like his weren't as fortunate as me. But you have to decide. It's not the people around you to decide that you're going to straighten your life up, whether it's gambling, whether it's drugs and alcohol, whether it's domestic violence. You know who has to decide you're going to straighten your life up? You. You yourself have to decide that. Not everybody around you. Not the legal system. You know, I got pulled over for a DUI. It never fazed me. You know, got a DUI. Don't know how I never got busted for drugs. You know. But you yourself have to straighten up and decide there's a better way of life, and that's what I want to do. And I just hope anybody that's facing this can find a network of right people to decide there's a better life out there if you want to live it. If you want to die a bum, if you want to be in these situations, legal situations, financial busted situations, stay the way you are. You want to straighten up and be productive and have a good life or a better life than what you're having, straighten up no matter what the problem is, gambling, drugs, alcohol, whatever. Straighten up.
Yeah, no, it was wise words, Tony, and you know, it just like you have to know, you know, the whole, you know, where you're gonna steer, you know, what hole you're gonna hit, or you know, where there's an opening, and you know, you would think that riders in general, given. Or maybe it's the opposite. You can address this. I was going to say, you would think that in a vocation where you face death, or you know, or life and limb, peril to life and limb, you know, 5, 6, 7 times a day in the afternoon, and you know, the morning is maybe a little less dangerous, but it's still dangerous. You would think that habit and practice and you know, being in that environment would provide positive direction and make those lifestyle choices easier, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe the thrill of you know, the action in the afternoon, you're constantly chasing, you know, other kinds of highs, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Listen, you know, it is a high to win races. It's a high to stay fit and perform and know you were part of being a winner. You know, the dangers of the business, I used that as an excuse. And I'll never forget when a counselor told me, shut up and get sober, and then you can explain that 18 months from now. This is just what the counselor told me. And And I was talking about, oh, the dangers of being a junkie. Oh, and my childhood and all this crying and of why I like to do drugs. Why I did drugs was my release, you know, from my childhood. From the dangers of being a jockey. This is my release. This is how I celebrate that I've survived another day. And she said, that's all bullshit. She says, shut up and wait till you get sober 18 months. And then tell me when I was going to this counselor after getting out of second rehab I was in. And then I thought one day, after about 2 years, I said, you know what? I got involved with drugs, and it's a simple, simple reason. I like the feeling of getting high. It had nothing to do with any problems of the past, any dangers of the profession. I like that buzz. You know, same way, well, somebody goes home and has a couple beers or a glass of wine. Well, I like to continue it with Coke. You know, you could drink more, you could snort more, you could drink more, you could snort. I like being high. That's why I got high. And the high wasn't to relieve myself of the pressure of the business. That was all BS. I was trying to find an excuse instead of being accountable for my actions. Let me find an excuse that I can make up that people will buy. That's why I got high. I'm really a good guy. I thought, you know what, this counselor told me to shut up that day. I'll never forget. You know, and she was right on. She heard enough of that BS, you know. You get high because you like getting high. That's it, plain and simple. It's not a release. It's a cop-out. You're saying it's a release. I like getting high. I like my head floating in the clouds. I like being in the fog. You know? It was just an excuse to let myself off the hook. Oh, it's a dangerous business. Oh, BS. When I signed my license, when I started galloping horses, I knew people got hurt. Would I think I was going to be one of the chosen few? No, I knew that. Every job knows that. But, you know, if you use it as an excuse, it's just that. A BS excuse.
Well, I hope for the best, but you know, it doesn't look promising. And you know, these stories always seem to have the same you know, bad ending. You know,
death is a lot of the bad ending. We've seen jockeys, yeah, and trainers. I know trainers. I know jockeys. They were kids when I was an older rider that aren't here. There was jockeys that I started out with that aren't here. And the end of the story was they aren't here because they weren't fortunate enough to say, I want to be straight. I want to do things right. I want to be accepted into this business. I want to be accepted into my household and my life, my personal life. And I want to do it the way it's supposed to be done, with as little controversy as possible, with no drugs and alcohol, and not making the front page because I got busted again for domestic violence. You know, there's a bunch of riders I know, and some of them riding and straightening their lives up, and they're doing quite well now, that one of the awakening points of their life was domestic violence, and they got arrested, and they lost their families. And the only way they could have any relationship with their family anymore was after, you know, the violent part of the domestic violence. And some of them, it was violence in a pool room with a cue stick and altercations, you know, on the street. Well, they finally took a hold of that, and they did rebuild their lives. Some of them are still riding today or involved in other avocations, and they're doing quite well. But then they're the ones that are the sad story that are out there. They're either still bombing around or they're dead. Or they're dead, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony, I wish we'd spent 20 minutes talking some race results, but Pennsylvania's situation and this situation, the topics, and that's, you know, that happens. So that's all right. I'm glad you got out there to the show and to the rally, and I appreciate those notes. And we'll catch up next week. We'll swing back to the racing.
I love you, Steve. This horse racing house is made of steel. He ain't gonna do all the huffing and puffing he wants. He ain't blowing it down.
Love you too. Tony Black, everybody. The one and only. Let's take a break. We got to get to Steve Askin, and we'll talk to Steve about his impressions of what happened at Tampa, the Sam Davis and Nadal on Sunday. And then start to look at the Risen Star. We'll see what Steve's thoughts are about the two divisions. And, of course, Governor Morris running tomorrow. Lots to look at. And we'll do it with Steve Askin. After this, Rich Yang, too. We'll go back to Vegas one more time. And as I mentioned, Ed Peters tomorrow. Fantini, to those of you that play against him online. Ed, very sharp. And we're going to utilize his very careful tracking of the Oaklawn opening weekend and parlaying it to steal Andy Serling's trips and traps. You know, which horses that ran outside and chased the inside speed, particularly opening day, but also that second day as well. To a degree, those horses are running back right now, and they're running well. The bet backs, this is how I want you to, you know, if you're fairly new and you know you haven't heard, you know, this kind of approach and, you know, the legwork that goes into, you know, being prepared to cash down the road where once you've understood how, you know, certain races were run. That's what it's all about. So Ed Peters tomorrow, in addition to the other weekend preview action. Haskins next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older in 21 certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Everyone that I know is broken, and it's found forever. We're back at the races. About 5 minutes to the top of the hour. Steve Haskin joining us. And, you know, for a weekend where we kind of thought, well, it's kind of quiet. There's the Sam Davis and the San Vicente. It ended up being pretty significant. And, of course, two divisions of the Risen Star on Saturday. The Southwest will draw tomorrow for Monday, for Holiday Monday. Steve Haskin, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You threw me off today, by the way. Your schedule online has archives for today.
What do you mean?
I don't know. It's on the Thursday. It says archives.
Interesting. Where?
I wasn't sure whether you were going on or not.
I don't know what that even... You mean like on the...
On the schedule. On the,
interesting.
It had Wednesday blank, and it had on Thursday it shows part one, part two, part three archive.
Oh, I see. No, I see. It was put in the wrong. Okay, it was put in the wrong. I see it now. Okay. Well, let me see. Barbara Minshall and Johnny. Oh, okay. That was put in the wrong place. And actually, I told everybody the third hour. We knew the third hour was corrupted, but hours one and two were okay. But I'm surprised that they're not there. I see what you mean. Okay, all right. Well, that'll be corrected.
There's no corruption in horse racing.
Well, in the recording of the show yesterday, there was. So that's hour three. Steve, you know, we were obviously at NHC and had so much fun. I don't know if you tuned in at all to the contest, but it's so much fun under that scenario, especially on Saturday. And, you know, we're commenting on the plays and bringing people in. But, you know, at the same time, we're watching all the racing. And so you see virtually everything because it's not like being at home. And, you know, even if you have RTN, and I should really do some we've got a promotion going with RTN. We just started. That's about the one way, I suppose, you can see all the split screen action. But at the contest, we had eight racetracks running at once, and you pretty much can see everything that's happening. And so it was kind of fun because you get, you know, you're right on top. You don't have to hear about something, you know, days later that happened. And, you know, that included a horse like Spa City for Kieran that looks like there's upside. And then came, of course, all the action at Tampa. And your thoughts, what did we see? I had a fun conversation with Patrick Biancone. This looks like a fascinating horse, Sol Vellante.
Yeah, well, I jumped him right up to number two. That's how much I thought of the race. I was very, very impressed. You know, sometimes you see a horse that just, you know, as they say, checks off all the boxes. And I mean, I could not find any flaws. As I wrote in Derby Dozen, he looks like a Derby horse. I mean, he's the kind of horse you look for in a Derby. I just love the way he runs. He's got a beautiful stride to him. I like his earlier races. He showed what a devastating stretch run he had on the grass. And then he came back and he ran a good third. You know, he didn't explode like he did on the grass when he ran into Mucho Macho Man. But I tell you, those two horses are finished ahead of him. That Mucho Macho Man is going to turn out to be a very telling race. I think Chancet is a lot better horse, and he certainly moves up now, as does the runner-up, as seen on TV. I think they both ran very good races. I think that race was probably short for him. And he closed well enough, was only beaten two lengths. In this race, wow, I mean, he just absolutely exploded. And you could see him come. When you could see him coming, you knew he was loaded. When you saw him come into the picture at the 3/8 pole, he comes up on the inside, then swings out. And the way he just... the way he just ran right by Independence Hall, and the way he did it, he won with his ears pricked. His third quarter, when he made that big move, he ran that third quarter in 23 flat. came home the last 16th and 6th flat. I mean, that's serious running. And, you know, if you look at his pedigree, man, I love this, what's his pedigree. And you would think from his pedigree that he would be a grass horse. So yeah, I give a lot of credit for Patrick, you know, for putting him on the dirt. But if you look at his pedigree, you know, he's inbred to Miesque. So he's got the Rasmussen factor, and you don't see many foreign mares in the Rasmussen factor. But the one thing you have to remember is that everybody knows of Miesque as obviously a champion grass miler and, you know, a two-time Breeders' Cup winner. But people don't realize that Miesque's broodmare sire is Prove Out, who, as you know, is one of my all-time favorites. And all Prove Out did was trounce Forgo, Secretariat, and River Ridge in 2 months. So, I mean, I think very highly of Prove Out, who was King Ranch, tremendous pedigree. So I think, you know, he might get a lot from that. And then you start looking at the female family, and you start seeing that Mill Reef Shirley Heights line, which is one of the most successful in Europe. And, you know, both Mill Reef and Shirley Heights both won the English Derby. And you start looking at the broodmares in there. I mean, Sovolante Dam is a half-sister to Light Shift, who won the English Oaks and was second in the Irish Oaks. His third dam, Northern Trick, was a tremendous filly. She's a half-sister to On the Sly, who won the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And she won the French Oaks and the Prix Vermeil and was second in the Arc de Triomphe. I mean, and the pedigree is the pedigree is absolutely loaded. I mean, this horse is going to run all day. And, you know, you look at the site, you say, all right, well, Caracanti was a grass miler. But I tell you who he really reminds me of a lot is Leroy DeSanimo, who was a grass miler. They're both, you know, both foreign breds, both grass milers. And Leroy DeSanimo sired Animal Kingdom, who, like Sol Volante, you know, excelled on dirt and grass and had a huge closing kick. So he sort of, the Caracanti sort of reminds me of Leroy DeSanimo. And if this horse is even half as good as Animal Kingdom. So, I mean, it's just a fascinating horse. And, you know, I don't feel that strongly about many horses, so I had no reluctance at all to move him up to number two. He wasn't quite ready to hit the top. You know, I'm not taking Tiz Lalor off because I'm a big fan of his, and I think he's certainly a legitimate Derby contender and deserves to be number one. But, I mean, you know, for me to go from a horse who's off the Derby dozen all the way to number two in a race like the Sam Davis, it just shows you how impressed I was with his race. And, you know, like I said, you know, Patrick Bianco comes from out of nowhere, and now he's got a pretty good 1-2 punch in the Derby when you add Etchier Indian. So he's got two... got two huge Derby horses. And, you know, you mentioned the race at Gulfstream, Spot City. Yeah, listen, you can't knock him. I mean, he ran a mile and eighth and 149-1, and he looked really legitimate, a really solid horse. And this is about the time you want to see a horse break his maiden, and he broke it at a mile and an eighth. So he certainly could be ready to step up into stakes company. You know, he's not going to find any non-winners, so they're going to probably go stakes company with him now, you know, especially having supposedly lost Maxfield for the Derby, unless he makes some kind of miraculous recovery. I mean, he's not even anywhere near a race yet. So Godolphin has this horse, and he looks like a legitimate horse. And, you know, and they also have, you know, and Karen also, you know, for Shadwell has Ajaweed, who, you know, even though he was well beaten, he was just way too far. He's just been dulled. You know, I always keep saying when you run into Remsen, it really dulls you because, you know, they're going to go 153 or 154, and then he comes back with, you know, with another race where he's way, way back. So I think a horse like Ajaweed, if they can shorten him up, maybe go for the Gotham or something like that. I don't know what their plans are. But if he can shorten up, man, just to get some speed, he showed good tactical speed earlier in his career. So, you know, I'm not gonna throw out Ajaweed. But that's another thing I liked about Sol Volante. I mean, 11 and a quarter lengths to the third horse. I mean, that's also pretty. That's what I love to see. I love to see big gaps. More so, I love to see big gaps between second and third more than I'd like to see a horse win by a large margin, because you never know what he's beaten. But when they run, when there's a big gap between second and third, you know that there's at least one good horse in there. And there was some other good horses. Like I said, I mean, Ajaweed looks like, he, you know, when the distances stretch out, he's going to be just fine. I would not give up on him. And another horse, by the way, and it's probably going to be too late for him to make the Derby, because you really have to be a winner by now. But the horse that ran second to Spot City, this Pletcher horse, Unrighteous, boy, did I like what I see, what I saw there. And again, you're talking about a gap. The gap in that race was like 14 lengths to the third horse. And, you know, he's still a little green, and he doesn't have the greatest action. But I tell you, if I had that horse, I'd run him right into a stakes race. I would say forget about it. This was like a maiden victory. When you finish that far ahead of the third horse, and it was a pretty good, there were some pretty good horses. Chad Brown's horse that finished third, he was like in another zone back there, telephone talker. And I know he was a favorite, and they had high hopes for him. And he was just totally outdistanced by these two horses. And I just thought, Unrighteous looks like a real stayer, very long and lean, and he's got a big stride to him. It's kind of a sloppy stride, but he'll get over that. Like I said, he's still a little bit green, but he's got the pedigree. Watch out for that horse. If they stick with a maiden race, he's going to be a lock in his next start. But I would say, you know what? This was as good as a maiden victory. I don't need to run him in a maiden race again. I'd just go right into Stakes Company with him and see what you got. I think he's that talented. So remember that horse. But no, it was a good day. It was a good day for racing. I mean, I thought we saw some very talented horses. And then of course on Sunday we had the San Vicente, and you know everybody's going nuts over Nadal. And you know, I knew I was going to take. Actually, I didn't. I thought I was going to take a lot more heat for not having him in the top 12. You know, I already have two Baffert horses. But you know, listen, if you're deserving, you're deserving. But I had absolutely nobody to take off. I mean, nobody did anything. I like all the horses I have in the top 12. And the bottom line is, he's had two sprint races. And you know, I started looking back. And you have to go back a long, long way. You have to go back 53 years. In the last 53 years, only two horses have gone into March. Only two Derby winners have gone into March not having run past 7 furlongs. And they're both trained by Baffert. Hmm. So, you justify who was a Triple Crown winner. And you had Silver Charm, who won two legs of the Triple Crown, and who was a Grade 1 winner at two. I still think this horse has to, you know, he still has to show, you know, what he has. I mean, he's a very talented horse, but let's not get too over the top. Everybody says, "Oh well, you know, he ran a half in 44." Well, yeah, but you know what? Storm the Court, who's not even a speed horse, really, he ran the half in 44-1 and was beaten two lengths in a race that he's just in as a prep. So. And the thing is, the bottom line is that they got a 91 buyer. Yeah, I don't like to go by buyers too much, but if you are a buyer pundit, you know, I mean, 91 is certainly nothing spectacular. I think he's a good horse, but I just want to wait before I start putting him, you know, in the top 12. They went the last eighth in that race in 13-3, and the first four finishes were separated by 2.25 lengths. So let's see what he does. He's going to run in a Rebel next, and if he runs big there, then you got a Derby horse. But I'm not going to rush to put him in off a 2.7 off a 6.5 in a 7 furlong race, and then have to wait, you know, 5 weeks for the Rebel, you know, to see what we have. There's going to be too much going on. Even if I put him in the top 12, you know, after this weekend, there's a good chance that somebody would bump him out of it anyway. So, again, I'm just going to play a wait-and-see attitude with him. I'm not going to rush and proclaim him the next superstar like a lot of people are doing.
I actually thought that, I mean, I guess it all depends on, and you've got all the comments that come in underneath the postings, but it seemed to me actually that people were, that I saw reaction-wise, including as we were sitting Sunday, you know, following the contest action, that people were not all that tickled by the effort.
I thought for sure that people would say, you know, oh, how could you leave Nadal off? You know, how could you do this? It was hardly a mention of him. I mean, people didn't say anything about it. I mean, it's just like, all right, you know, a couple of people think that he was a good horse, which is fine. And he is a good horse. But we're talking, you know, top 12 in the Kentucky Derby right now. And the point I made, which I mentioned, you know, to someone, if this horse was trained by Richard Balthus or Simon Callahan, if people are going to be going nuts over what he's done, he broke his maiden by 3¾ lengths, and then he barely won his second, you know, a sprint stake, you know, with the first four finishes within two and a quarter lengths of each other, and he gets a 91 buyer. If he was trained by Richard Balthus, are people going to go nuts over him? No. You know, he's trained by Bob Baffert. And rightly so. You know, when Bob Baffert has a good horse, people take notice. But, you know, let's not proclaim him the next Justify quite yet. We'll see what he does in the Rebel first. And then if he runs well, he'll jump right onto the list.
Now, as I discussed yesterday, who was that even with? Who was that with? I can't keep track. Yesterday this came up, and I guess it was with Sid. We were going over pedigree on Nadal. And there's actually some real parallel the female families of Nadal and Sol Delonte. I thought the thing that was most encouraging coming out of that performance was Baffert's reaction, where he said, well, now I've got something to work with. And, you know, that was a terrific. I mean, he essentially used a pay spot and a black, you know, in a black type spot as a workout. He wanted to get a major tightener and a real, you know, brazer into him. And the fact that he immediately said, we'll go to the Rebel with him almost certainly. I thought that was a real vote of confidence in what you just saw and what Baffert is projecting for 4 weeks down the road. So I think the thing.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a vote of confidence that he's a very good horse, you know, which he probably is. I just don't know right now if he's a Derby horse. He's only going to have four starts going into the Derby. Two of them are going to be sprint races. So he's, you know, he's still got some catching up to do. You know, Baffert emailed me and told me I had the authentic too low. He said he was his best horse. So, you know, I don't know. I said, well, what happened to 1,000 words? You know, he was his best horse. And then I remember High Velocity was his best horse and Eight Rings was his best horse. And, you know, it happens. You know, these horses pop up and they run better and one supersedes the previous ones. So, you know, he keeps coming up with good horses. But, you know, Authentic, who, you know, to me still got to show that he wants to go 1¼ miles with his pedigree. He's got speed on top, speed on the bottom. But Baffert's high on him. And he does, physically, he does look like a stayer. And we'll see. I mean, you know, Into Mischief has had horses that certainly have excelled at 1⅛ miles. And we'll see how far, you know, this horse out of a Mystic Reeley mares. I mean, I just don't know how far the female family is going to going to take him. But he's also obviously a very good horse. And the thing about 1,000 words, which I had mentioned, is that I don't know how long he can go cutting it as close as he does. And I know he's beaten some really good horses. But I was surprised to see that his last start, his Thoroughgraph number actually regressed a couple of points, which really surprised me. So sometimes you just don't know. You know, from a visual standpoint, I don't know if you can go by handicapping with a horse like that. Because all he does is just win. He just does what he has to do to win. And I don't think he's not going to break any track records. He's not going to beat you by 8 lengths. He's going to beat you by what he has to beat you by. So we'll see. I mean, At one point, Baffert thought he was his best. Who knows? You know, you really can't tell. These three-year-olds fool you. You know, I've seen him fool Baffert, too. I mean, Baffert's the most astute trainer there is when it comes to evaluating his own horses. But, you know, he gets fooled. We all get fooled.
Sure. Sure.
You know, these horses are developing right now. You don't know what's going to come up. Let's put it this way. I mean, at this time, last year, Justify had not even run.
Hmm.
You know, nobody knew who he was.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 years ago. I mean,
Yeah.
You know, you don't know where these horses are going to come from. You know, a few years ago, Always Dreaming, you know, was breaking his maiden at Tampa and then winning an allowance race in slow time. And,
that's true.
Yeah, you know, nobody gave him, all of a sudden he pops up and he romps into Florida Derby. So you just don't know, because these three-year-olds, they improve rapidly at this time of the year.
Very true.
So you're guessing. You're trying to make it. You're trying to make a good observation, a good analysis from statistics, speed figures. But I tell you, like I said, these horses, these young horses, they fool you. They pop up out of nowhere.
On that topic, Steve, let's actually transition from last week to tomorrow. And before we even get to the two divisions of the Risen Star, some thoughts about Governor Morris tomorrow in a Tampa allowance for Pletcher. And it's not just Governor Morris. This is a good group of five. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Pletcher thought he was going to get an easy one here. Because originally he was talking about going in the Southwest, which is where I thought he was going. I know Pletcher likes to run at Tampa. He runs a lot of horses at Tampa. Actually, I thought he was going to run into Sam Davis. When I spoke to the stakes coordinator at Tampa, he was surprised that when he spoke to Pletcher, and Pletcher said he's not sending anybody. So he was kind of shocked. And then he winds up, instead of running to Sam Davis, which he belonged in that race for sure, he waits to run him, you know, in an allowance race. So I don't know what you can make of that. Maybe he's thinking, like, after, you know, with a 4 month layoff, he wants to give him an easier race. But if you do this, what do you do with him afterwards? You can run him only one more time? He's got, you know, he's got to get points. You're going to rely on one race to get points? If you're running this race, do you go back in the Tampa Bay Derby and then maybe run in, like, the Bluegrass Stakes or the Wood or one of those races or the Arkansas Derby? Or do you wait and go from this race into the Florida Derby? And if you do that, then you have one more race. And, we're dealing with horses going into the Derby off of four starts, five starts. You don't know what you have. I mean, these horses are so lightly raced. And they're still immature. They have no experience. But listen, a lot of these trainers can put bottom in a horse. Baffert puts bottom in a horse. Fletcher can put bottom in a horse. But it's that racing experience that they lack. When you're going into it, all of a sudden, you go from running in a mile and 40-yard allowance race at Tampa, and two races later, you're running in a 20-horse field against nothing but graded stakes winners, you know, and with traffic and bumping and post-1 or post-20 or whatever. These horses aren't ready for that. Obviously, somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to win the race. We saw what happened last year. You know, he had a horse that was running for a $16,000 claiming race, and he beats a horse that, you know, that nobody paid any attention to with Country House. So it's crazy. But as far as Governor Morris, listen, I was a big fan of the horse when he broke his maiden. I thought he was extremely impressive. I just loved the way he did it. He did it so easily, and you know, he overcame a bad start, and he just won all by himself and galloped out great. I mean, I thought it was a very, very powerful first start. And then he went, and it was in the slot. So you don't know. So then he goes from a 5.5 furlongs into a mile and a 16th Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity. And, you know, I know he didn't get a good buy. He got a 78 buyer. His buyer actually went down, and his Thoroughgraph remained the same. He ran both races were a 5 on the Thoroughgraph, you know, which is good, but, you know, nothing extraordinary. But you don't want too extraordinary as a two-year-old. You don't want these horses peaking too soon. And he had the outside post in the Breeders' Futurity. He was 5-6 wide going into the first turn, wide the whole way. And he hit the front to me, you know, too soon. And nobody really knew how good Maxfield was. And before he knew it, Maxfield was all over him and pulled away. And I thought he was game to hold off Enforceable for second. But he has been. He's been working great. He's had a couple of bullet workouts, working steady, like his pedigree. So I think he's a very talented horse. But you know what? If you run this horse into Sam Davis and you run second, let's say, to Sol Volante, all right, it's good first out. Not this race. This race, he's got to win. And I know there's some good horses in here. And, you know, unless Untitled is even better than we think he is, and he could be very, very good. You know, he's a horse that romped by 11 in his first start, gets a 98 buyer in his first start. And then the Swale was a total throwout. I mean, a horrible break in that race. He got absolutely battered around at the start of that race, and then made a move, and then you know, he finished fourth. He just missed out on second. He was in a 3-horse photo for second in that race. So I thought he ran huge. So you figure in this race now, you know, stretching out to two turns for the first time. If he runs back to that to his first two starts, you know, he could give Governor Morris a little run for his money. And then we have, you know, another horse in there, you know, Let Me Know, Ian Wilkes' colt. He's coming off. He hasn't run since the Iroquois, but he finished fourth, and he closed from the clouds to finish fourth against Dennis's Moment, which I thought he ran an excellent race. And race before that, he was second in the Ellis Park Juvenile to Rowdy Yates, who's a pretty good horse, who recently won the Riley Allison 330. So he's not like he got beat by nobody. And plus, he's got another one in there that he's stretching out from a sprint that he actually debuted at Tampa, Dudley Square, an Into Mischief colt. And, you know, even the rail horse, the Sunion, I mean, there's certainly nothing wrong with him. He's been running against excellent horses. Again, you know, he's been running against Dennis's Moment. He's been running against New York Traffic, who's a pretty good horse, who's coming back and running on Saturday. So, you know, he's been running against some nice horses. And his last race was a decent third in Allowance Company after he broke his maiden at Churchill in the slop going a mile. It was actually a pretty strong race. Should Governor Morris win? To me, you should, because I got him ranked number five. Could Untitled beat him? Sure. I mean, Untitled's a really nice horse. But if Governor Morris loses this race, there's a good chance I might have to just drop him, depending what happens. I might have to just drop him from the top 12, but he'll certainly have to be lowered, because if you're going to run a horse in a race like this to start out, they really have to win if you want to consider them legitimate Derby horses. Because, again, if he's going to have two more starts, I'll say, okay, fine, let's see what happens in this race. But, you know, with Pletcher, doesn't like to run him too close together. So he may only have one more start. And if he does have one more start, he better win this one.
Yeah, agreed. Let's turn to Saturday, and we'll talk fairgrounds. These two divisions, unbelievable. Two divisions of the
Rising
Star. Yeah, it's crazy.
These are tough races. I mean, let's put it this way. You got the first three finishes of the LeCompte in one division, and I'm not so sure it's the strongest division. I mean, there's some really nice horses in here. Some up and comers as well. I mean, you can go through the whole field, and you can start looking. But again, you gotta like Enforceable. You gotta like Silver State, and you gotta like Mr. Monomoy. All three horses ran well last time, so I don't see any reason why they shouldn't come back and run well. I think they're interchangeable. Enforceable could certainly win again. Mr. Monomoy, you know, he can certainly improve off his last start. I thought he ran a very good race last time. And Silver State, you know, came from out of it and was closing really well in the stretch. He hasn't run a bad race in his three starts. His main thing is whether he wants to, you know, pass horses. You know, his first start, he bet heated. He couldn't catch the horse in front of him. Next start, he couldn't catch the horse in front of him and got beat a nose, Necker Island, who's, you know, is a decent horse. And then he closed. He couldn't catch Enforceable. So He's just got to show that he can actually catch and pass a horse. But I think, you know, the future is all his. Yeah, and Steve Rasmussen, by the way, every week I say the same thing. He's got horses coming out of the woodwork. He's got seven horses again this weekend. Yeah. You know, he's got three. He's going to have three in the Southwest. He's got one in each of these divisions. He's got horses in allowance companies. He's absolutely loaded. He's got so many good horses.
What about Brett Calhoun and Mr. Thomas, Chet Thomas, with three horses in the two divisions?
Yeah, for sure. But the thing is, I haven't even touched some of the other good horses. We don't know how good this Blackberry Wine is. Blackberry Wine, his last race, I thought was a tremendous race. You know, he was out on the lead. He looked like he was dead beat in that race by Digital, who's in this race, who's a very, very nice horse in his own right. And I just love the way he dug in and the way he came back and won. And won, not only came back and won after getting passed at the eighth pole, where he looked totally beaten, but he won going away and actually galloped out really strong in that race. And, you know, he's a Calumet horse trained by Joe Sharp. He's son of Oxbow, which I kind of find kind of interesting, out of an AP Indy mare. He's never run a bad race. We really don't know how good this horse is. And I tell you another thing too, by the way, in that last start where he came again, the favorite in that horse that finished third, Chestertown, he's in an allowance race early on the card. And he's a $2 million. He's a New York bred. They use a $2 million 2 year old. And this Chestertown is meant to be a really good horse. He could come out of here, you know, smelling like roses. So if he wins this allowance race impressively, he could certainly be something.
He could also get beat by his stablemate Renan.
Yeah, he's not, we don't know how good he is. He's not very experienced, you know. But he's a very nice horse himself. You know, another horse I want to mention here. Castellano was on him. Is this Farmington Road that Pletcher has? The thing I like about his last start, he broke his maiden in his last start after running second to Moon Over Miami. Another horse was in these stakes races. And then he comes back and he wins, and he gets a hundred Equibase figure, which is pretty good. But the second horse in that race, again, I don't know what he was beating, but the second horse in that race finished almost 17 lengths ahead of the third horse. Even he was 16 3/4 lengths instead of the third horse. So, you know, he was 1-5 in there. I don't know what he was beating. But, he got a good number. He was owned by LaPenta and Eclipse, and that, you know, that partnership. So, we'll have to see how good this horse is. I mean, like I said, you never know. These horses, they come out of the woodwork. And then you can't ignore the horse on the outside, Scabbard, who's already shown he's a good horse. You know, he ran a terrific second, I thought, to Green Light Go in the Saratoga Special. And then, you know, even though Dennis's moment was eased in the Iroquois, he had a ton of trouble in that race, and he was flying at the end. He was only beaten a length of 3/4. Excuse me. You know, and then he was a bit of a disappointment in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but he finished fourth. And again, I'm not going to, you know, on that racetrack, some horses just didn't handle it. I'm not going to condemn him. And in LeCompte, again, you know, you look at the thing, and you look at his line across, you know, he's fifth by seven, and you think, so-so. But again, terrible trip. I mean, he had a steady and take back and come on again. He was a 3-1 favorite in that race. But I can certainly see him certainly improving. You know, he goes from, you know, nothing wrong with Corey Lannery, but he goes from Lannery to Joel Rosario. So, you can't throw that horse out. I think he's a really nice horse. I remember seeing him when he broke his maiden. I was very, very impressed with him. But I was at the track when the Green Light Go won, and I liked his race a lot. That's when he had that horrible name of Noose, and that they had to change his name. But that's only the first division. So, you know, so besides all these horses I'm mentioning, and the first three finishes from the LeCompte, then you come to the second division, and you say, well, I mean, all the good horses are in that division. So what do you wind up with here? You got Anno Dor coming in, you know, from Golden Gate, who's been working really well. And the key thing is he gets blinkers. And if ever a horse looked like he needed blinkers, it was this horse. If you look at his two races in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and in the Los El Futurity, I mean, the jockey whipped the bejesus out of him in there. I mean, they had to ask him, and he would not pass Storm the Court, and he would not pass Thousand Words. And he got these photos in both of them. In both races, he had won. He looked like he was going to go by both those horses in both those races, and he refused to go by him. And you look at it and say, all right, well, he's obviously a logical candidate for blinkers. So he's had blinkers in the last few workouts, and he's worked really well. And I got to love the fact, you know, he also gets Rosario, you know, which is huge. And I think I counted in the Breeders' Cup. I think he was whipped like 17 times in that race, and he was whipped 20 times in the at Los Al. So we'll see what happens here. If these blinkers help, you know, he's probably the best horse on the card. I mean, he's already shown that. But, I mean, you know, we've got plenty of other horses here. You know, Liam's Lucky Charm is coming off a brilliant race in the Pasco. He's stretching back out to two turns. You know, the only poor race he ran, even though he was a well-beaten third, was when a chance it beat him by almost 11 lengths going the mile and the 16th in reality. Now it's his only start around two turns, and then he went back to seven. Now he's going back to two turns again. But, you know, so we'll see how far he can carry speed. But his race in the Pasco, you know, where he went in 121-3 and one going away, beating a really, really nice horse named Albert Park, who's coming back and he's running in Maryland on Saturday in the Miraclewood. And he's a really, really nice horse himself. Keep an eye on him. And then we got the fourth place finisher in the LeCompte, Finnick the Fierce. Yeah, he was way too far out of it. You know, he's a one-eyed horse, and he actually is getting blinkers off in his race. In his first start of his career, he did not wear blinkers, and he won very impressively, going five furlongs. And then in the last three races, he's closed really well. But he was a little bit green, obviously, and, you know, got his head cocked and running. So he gets the blinkers off, so I guess they want him to see as much as he can. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him run a big race. I think he's a really good horse.
Getting outside helps.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. Yeah. He's the kind of horse you don't want on the inside. You know, there's another horse that I've been touting since week one. I don't think he's quite ready to win a race like this. I'm surprised they would throw him in off a maiden win. But this horse, Major Fed, mm-hmm. he didn't get good Mathurgraph numbers. So, you know, he probably needs this race, but, you know, if you're looking for a horse to pick up a piece of it, I was very impressed when he broke his maiden at Fairgrounds. I thought he looked really good in that race. I mean, his echo base number was a 96. You know, which is nothing. You know, which is nothing to sneeze at. It's certainly not reflected as poorly as his Thoroughgraph numbers. But I think he could be a really nice horse. I'm curious to see what he does. He also gets a jockey chain. He gets Julian Leperu, which I think will help him. There's so many horses. I mean, you can go over every single one of these horses in here. Mailman Money is undefeated. He's coming off a really nice victory at Fairgrounds. You know, it was an off the turf race, but he won very easily going away. And the horse I'd mentioned earlier, this New York Traffic that Safi Joseph has, his last race was extremely impressive at Gulfstream. He won wire to wire by almost seven lengths. And I thought that was a very impressive race. So, you know, and that was his first start around two turns. He had sprinted four times, was so, but he obviously appreciated the stretch out to two turns. And it's another good New York bred as well. So, I mean, literally, you could get 23 horses in this race, And you can go down and make some kind of a case for almost all of them to at least finish in the money somewhere to, you know, be part of the exotics. Because some of these horses, you just don't know how good they are, and you don't know who's gonna pop up. You know, Bill Mott's got a colt that looked good. You know, again, it wasn't fast time, but it was an aqueduct. You know how slow aqueduct is now. But he broke his maiden going a mile and eighth, and won by four lengths. You know, wire to wire. So it's modernist. He's an Uncle Merle out of a Bernardini mare. Do we know how good he is? No. Do we know how good Jack Sisterson's colt is? Truculent. No, we don't know how good he is either. You know, he had put the blinkers on, took them back off, and he breaks his maiden again, wire to wire, going away. I mean, I don't know. Good luck betting this race, I'll tell you. Both of these races, good luck betting.
Should be fun. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then, like I said, you got Chestertown running earlier on the card. You got a horse that I know that they're, you know, pretty high on, this sharecropper, who was a $600,000 yearling. He's in there, and the horse you had mentioned is Renan. You know, he won his only start. Again, do we have any clue how good he is? No, I thought he was very impressive in his last start. He came from off the pace, and again, one going away. Is he quite ready for this? For some of these horses, it's possible. You know, you just don't know.
No, it's going to be.
It's an interesting. It's
fun.
An interesting year so far.
Yeah, very much.
And then you got the Southwest on Monday when you get all those Aspies, and we'll see how good that Gold Street is, and there'll be a few other decent horses in there. I would have preferred if Governor Morris was in there to see what we have, but. You know, you got Shoplifted, who, you know, he's a very good horse, Silver Prospector, and won the Kentucky Jockey Club. These are all Aspiration horses.
Brad Cox, I think, has got at least two, maybe two. Answer In and Wells by You.
Yeah.
D. Wayne with American
Wells
Butterfly,
who broke
his maiden at American Butterfly, who broke his maiden nicely at Saratoga.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Lucas likes to run him back. Wells Bayou could be an interesting horse. He won big in an allowance race last time, but you know he didn't run. I think they ran a mile in like 140 and change. But you know we don't know how good he is. The horse to beat in here is Answer In. He's unless Gold Street goes out there and steals the race, I don't know if he will. I mean, there's some other horses with speed in there. But Answer In, I loved his race in the Springboard Mile where he had to alter course and went to the inside and just got beat ahead by Shoplifter. He's got a dynamite pedigree for distance, and I think we're going to see big improvement. So even though Asmussen's got these three in there, if I had, I wouldn't be surprised if Answer In winds up being the favorite over all these horses. You know, Gold Street probably has a good chance to be favored, but watch out for Answer In. And then Pletcher's got Chase Tracker, who he's bringing in instead of Governor Morris. He was third. No, I shouldn't say well beaten, but he was third in the Remsen, and so we'll see. We'll see what he does coming off of that race. The thing about Wells Bayou, by the way, which I love, is the fact that, you know, sometimes you see a good pin hook and sometimes you see a poor pin hook. He sold at Keeneland sale in January for $50,000. They pin hooked him back in Keeneland September and he sold for $18,000. So obviously, he didn't progress much from January to September, and then he put him back again the following year in the OBS March. He only went for $105,000, so you know, which isn't that bad. But you know, when you pay $50,000 for a horse and then wheel him back in the Keeneland September sale, you know, you bring only $18,000. So it wasn't the most successful pin hook.
Should be a very nice day Monday at at Oaklawn. Looking forward to talking to Hammer tomorrow between the Razorback Southwest and the Baiacoa. And there's a lot of stars on that card. Including Motion to Motion and more at in the Baiacoa field. And you got, I saw where Marcus Hirsch was watching Warriors Charge. We talked to Marshall Graham over the weekend, and Warriors Charge returns in the Razorback, angling toward the Oaklawn handicap. And Marcus was agog at how Warriors Charge looked. He said he might just gallop all the way from New Orleans to Hot Springs. But that race is going to, that's a fun race. Snapper Sinclair, Bravazo, Jovia for Greg Sacco, Rated R Superstar, Sadler's got Campaign.
There's a lot of good race. You know, the thing is that, you know, we mentioned these three-year-old races. Like I said, you also have the Miracle Wood, and there's some interesting horses in there. I mean, John Service has got a horse for Pat Chapman.
You know, we talked about him last week. We talked about him last week with John.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he broke his maiden by almost 15 lengths. The horse I mentioned to you earlier, Albert Park, was at an interesting career. He started off on the poly track at Arlington, and then he went to the synthetic at Presque Isle. He wins both of those races, and then he shows up in the Cecil B. DeMille at Del Mar on the turf. And then from there he goes to Tampa. He went second in the Pasco, and so here's a horse, and he stabled at Tampa, and now he winds up at Laurel, even though he stabled at Tampa. So I find him an interesting race. New Commission is a really nice horse. I think it was second in the Heft Stakes behind Monday Morning QB, who was a really nice horse, and then came back and ran a pretty decent race in the Withers. You know, he was fifth to behind Max Player. But, he certainly fits on a Miracle Wood. Looks like a good race. You got the El Camino Real Derby. You got the Turf Paradise Derby. They're not going to produce any Derby horses, but they are three-year-old races. And then you got to look at those other races at Fairgrounds. We got the return of Hofburg coming
That's
in
right.
there. And Rachel Alexandra. I mean, you got two monster fillies in there that, you know, certainly you have to look at them as some major factors looking ahead to the Oaks. You know, the British Idiom, you got a champion in there and a Breeders' Cup winner, and you got Finit, Steve Asmussen, who else? So, I mean, that's going to be a good race, too. Tempest Rising was flying at the end of that Silver Bullet day. You know, so, you know, she's just getting better and better. So, you know, between that and these other races, the Mineshaft, and it's a pretty full weekend.
Great day of racing at Fairgrounds. No, it's going to be a terrific few days, and it's not just Saturday. Between Sunday and Monday, and we're starting to really pick up some momentum. Steve, we're momentuming into a Rich Eng visit. Rich standing by, so let's look forward to talking next week, do some recapping, and we also will be that much closer to the Fountain of Youth, right? Fountain of Youth on the 29th.
Yeah, look, that's going to be huge. I mean, when finally Dennis's moments return, and there will be some really, really good horses in that race. Chance It, and we'll finally see how good he is. I mean, this Fountain of Youth has got tremendous potential. Every one of these races are coming up strong.
Very much. And you mentioned the girls' race. It's amazing how each weekend, the last 3 weeks, we've had the emergence and confirmation.
Oh, that's really last week. Woof.
Unbelievable. Harbor. Well, Venetian Harbor. Harvey's Little Goyle. Taraz. I mean, every week there's been another major development on the Oaks picture, which looked pretty murky in December. And we haven't even seen Bast come back. Bast is yet to make her seasonal debut. So
it's going to be all right. Harbor and Taraz. I mean, you know, both of them, you know, they could be superstars the way they've been.
Harvey's Little Goyle. Go back and watch that Busanda again. She's the goods. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody's going to come out of the Rachel Alexandra. You know, British hitting machines are going to remain undefeated, or these you know, these other local fillies that have been running huge.
And we're also waiting. We're also waiting for Mott. You know, been talking about Harvey's Little Goy. We're also waiting for Lake Avenue to come back. There's a lot going on the young distaff front. Steve, let me get Rich in here before we run out of racetrack.
All righty.
Steve Haskin, everybody, Derby doings, Derby dozen, Derby ding dongs. There it is. Let's finish this busy morning. It's been nonstop. Rich Eng standing by. We had so much fun with Rich. Rich, essentially the third co-host of the Triumvirate on Friday and Saturday, particularly at NHC.